This is Caroline Cruz. I'm running for tribal council with the agency, WASCO. I want to thank Jackie Minson for the nomination, as well as my sister, Rosemary Arlacan, known as Mashi. I do know the last two times I was asked to run, and I said I would not, but circumstances has changed this time, so I decided I'll go ahead and accept the nomination. So I am one of 12 children. My mom is a late Henrietta, known as Etta Klima Johnson. She was married to my father, Francisco Medina Martinez. I was born in Monterey, California, and all 12 of us were born in California. My mom and dad did divorce in the early 60s, and so we were awarded custody of our father. So this is one reason why we were not raised on the reservation, but all of us pretty well ended up on the reservation. So my mom is descendant of the Klama family, and so her father was Henry Klama, and her mom was Rose Cuckup. So we are related to the Cuckup families. Family also, in addition to the Cuckup family, is the fact that my great-great grandfather was Peter Klama, married to Lily Pitt. And then on the Cuckup side, it's Mary to John Klama. And then there's the Pulash and the Siskiyous are also descendants of us, mainly from the Wasco area. I think some might be also from the North End. So a little bit about me. I'm the fifth in the line of the order of the 12 children. And I was started coming up to Warm Springs in the early 60s, and I would come up to visit my mom on a regular basis. So I am familiar in terms of a lot of the, you know, protocols, cultural, you know, longhouse traditions. I've been coming up, you know, ever since then. I did actually live here between 1977 to the late, 1987, and worked for our tribe, primarily running the drug program, the alcohol and drug program, and then becoming mental health therapists, as well as specializing in adolescents. And then I put the prevention program. Got recruited by the state. I wanted to learn more. So I did become a variety of positions up with the state, with the Addictions and Mental Health Division. And I did get my degree from Eastern Oregon State College before I became a university. Did go to Willamette University, got my certificate of management, specializing in terms of how the private sector and the public sector needs to work together in order, I think, to move, you know, changes, you know, within organizations. So I've been the general manager for the last almost 16 years and been mentoring Tal Foltz, known as TJ, in order to take over the general manager position. So now I'm still working for the tribe more in a capacity of overseeing the grants as well as the budget and continue to support TJ in his new role as the Health and Human Services branch. I think in terms of maybe looking at life as a whole, I think I've had the opportunity of starting to work in the fields. And so I understand in terms of what it is, in terms of doing hard work. I understand in terms of the importance of food sovereignty. Understand in terms of work ethics that I think I got, you know, from my father. And so I understand in terms of how it is to live in poverty. We were raised as my teenage years working in, living in a housing project. That's where I actually got my first job out of working in the fields and putting a program together for underprivileged youth within the housing project. So one of my first role was to work with, there was more than 400 young people in the housing project, and I was able to mobilize them, hire 14 workers, neighborhood youth workers, and just doing complete mobilization with the food program, taking them on field trips, keeping them busy. And then from there, I was recruited to stay on the program to continue to work with underserved, mainly adolescents who dropped out of school and it just worked with them. And so I have that kind of live experience in terms of living poverty and working with, you know, those who didn't seem to have any type of direction. And then for some reason, I became a cop, a deputy sheriff for a couple of years. And so then they put me in corrections in the female unit and correctional. And so I got another perspective in terms of the criminal world and how that works and how the criminal mind works and how there's a lot of injustice when it comes into corrections. Those who were poor got long sentences. Those who had money were let loose. And so it gave me an opportunity to see the inequities in terms of what's out there. And so then I did come up to Orange Springs, got hired in the drug program. And again, because my mom was an alcoholic, as well as my father, I was able to see that from the perspective in terms of what happens with the family dynamics when alcoholism and mental health issues play a big part. We did lose our youngest sister. She was 10 months old. I didn't know my mom was having a mental health breakdown. We didn't understand what that was. And so I have a special place in my heart for those people who are dealing with mental health issues and addiction, those who violate the law, so ended up in corrections. And so I then went with the state, and this is where I was exposed to how to write grants, you know, how to put policies together, how to do community mobilization, how to do trainings. I had the opportunity to train in almost every state. In fact, I did train in every state, as well as Canada and Puerto Rico, and able to work with the whole cross-section of people and to see the world and to understand in terms of all the complexity in terms of what happens, I think, within communities and just within people's lives as a whole. So my experience then coming home was the fact that I made a promise to my mom that I would live on the reservation and experience reservation life. Visiting, coming back and forth is a big difference in actually living on the reservation. I promised to go to Indian Health Services to experience the same type of thing that I heard in terms of their concerns. We put the Joint Health Commission together. We tried to alleviate a lot of those. We had a lot of good years where I think Indian Health Service and the tribe worked very close together. Unfortunately, things happen. Time changes, and we've lost a lot of really good, excellent doctors, nurses, different positions with Indian Health Service as well as the tribe. And when there's not that good combination, then, of course, we don't get the type of services that we need. The other, I think, really huge thing was the fact that Atwa, you know, Jody Kalika is the one who recruited me to come back because of my background with writing grants. So I could honestly say that I believe our budget when I first started was close to maybe 3, maybe $5 million, and now we're up to more than $40 million. And so it's the opportunity of creating jobs for other people, different departments, to make sure that we have a lot of protective factors in the community, that we built a lot of our programs, you know, not only built on science, but we also have a cultural connection. So I'm one of the main authors for the tribal-based practices and able to get that in statute at the state level. So we can make not only Warren Springs, but the other tribes within the state to be able to get reimbursed for some practices that we're doing in terms of tribal best practices. So that's, you know, just the top of my head that I could kind of remember, you know. You know, I honestly don't want to say I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, because I honestly don't believe from my experience and all the jobs and just my family life is the fact that I cannot do this. I can't do it, but I can maybe be part of a team to get things across. And honestly, in terms of I think the most success that I might have had in my work career is working as a team and taking the lead. I mean, you still need a leader. You need a leader. And you need someone that hopefully is going to direct our community in the positive direction. So when I look in terms of what we need to do in terms as a group, we definitely need to look at housing, because housing is a big need here. And there's so many barriers. We have, right now, we currently have dollars to build houses, but we have all these barriers in between in terms of how do we acquire the land. And once you acquire the land, is it in the best place in terms of having access to clean water, electricity? Those are the added, you know, type of costs. COVID taught me a lot in terms of how much money things really cost. I mean, it's one thing to dream and say, I want to, you know, put a COVID location, which we did at the Dips. And one thing to say, oh, wow, I got 7 modular units for $105,000, but then it cost me close to $1 million to get the place prepped, to bring in the water, to bring in electricity, to level the land. And those are the type of things that I think that we don't take in consideration, that we could have dreams, but you have to understand that if you don't work as a team with others to get things done, it's not going to be completed. So housing is definitely something I think we can actually work, you know, as a team and try to eliminate some of those barriers so we can get these houses up a little bit faster. The other thing is affordable wages. You know, we continue to try to work towards that. And I know in the almost 16 years I've been back home, that we've only had twice, I think, in terms of upgrading our salary grades. And it's one thing to raise the salary grade, but we still are behind in terms of with other similar size communities, especially in terms of our location, that we don't always take in consideration that everything is far away. All our services are far away. We do have a local store, but those prices tend to be a little bit higher, and with good reason, because of the fact that they need to bring their stuff in. We don't have, you know, local retail. I know we've talked about this for the last 10 years, but then again, we have to work as a team. We need to bring livable wages here. We need to have more opportunity to train in terms of like apprenticeship type, you know, programs. The other thing that we realize is the fact that we have to contract for everything. We don't have the expertise, you know, within our community. So housing, in terms of education for trade schools, because not everyone wants to go to college, and that's the reality. We don't have a college here. We still have to go off-site. Though there's opportunities to go online, for some people it's very hard, you know, to be in front of a computer and to try to take in everything. And a lot of people give up because of the fact that's not their learning style. And so we need more opportunity in order to train our folks so they could have a sustainable wage for them, in order for them now to afford maybe the different type of houses. And then we need to erase those barriers for the houses. So people talk a lot about poverty. But poverty is to me just a word. There's a lot of more things that goes into poverty. You know, it starts with a good education at the earliest stage, from 0 to 5. So we need to put more emphasis in our early our Head Start programs and our daycare programs, and give the opportunity at the earliest age possible in terms of teaching them in terms of how to read earlier. You know, how to learn conceptual steps in terms of what they're going to experience in life. So I encourage sports. You know, a lot of people say, why are you encouraging sports? And not just sports, but other type of opportunities for our young people to be involved with. Because when you do teamwork, you're teaching them how to work together as a team. Again, those are qualities that they need as they get older. Not only as a team, but they use sports teach them how to do things step by step. And this is what we need in life, to do things step by step and not just jump in and quit. Working as a team, again, is not winning, is working together and doing a good job. So those are the qualities that I believe builds a really good workforce. And it doesn't only have to be sports. I mean, they could go off into other type of thing. They could go into band, or they could, you know, learn to play an instrument. Those are still type of qualities that we need. So go back to housing, go back to education, goes back to increased participation and anything that's going to bring the community together. We do a lot of things, you know, within the branch. Some people say, well, why are you doing Halloween? You're just giving kids candy. It's not just giving them candy. It's bringing families out together. It's seeing the fact that kids need to see that their parents are having fun, their brother and sisters are having fun, and they could look forward to this event every year. It becomes a memory. The toy drive, you know, Easter egg, you know, hunt, the different types of round dances, the powwow. It's those type of things for young people as well as us as adults to look forward to, because if you don't have anything to look forward to, then you're going to become depressed. And so it's giving people the opportunity to participate with events. So those are the type of things that I think that we need to, again, of course, we need to bring in revenue. But then, you know, we need to figure out a way. You know, we need to think out of the box in terms of what can we do to bring revenue to the tribe, because we can't be dependent upon, you know, grants all the time. I mean, we're experiencing it right now in terms of new, you know, it's the new administration that there might not be a lot of grant opportunities. And so we need to find ways of getting enterprises and bring revenue. So those are the things, I think, the housing, to continue the education, to give people opportunity to participate in community type of events and enterprise. Thank you.